Good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it is March 21st, and we're going to start the chapter on nervous system today. So it's an introductory chapter, but what's kind of noteworthy about today is that this is the last chapter that's going to be included on your next lecture exam. So this finishes up the material, right? So we're March 21st, fundamentals of the nervous system and nervous tissue. Next time we're going to do central nervous system, but that won't be on your next test. The reason why is because next week, starting Monday, we have practicum. So I don't want to give you a lecture exam and a practicum on the same day. So we put the next lecture test off until April 4th. And you can see that it's chapter 10, which is skeletal muscle tissue, chapter 11, which muscles, all the muscles, 17, endocrine system, and then what we're going to cover today, 12, which is introduction to nervous system on April 4th. All right, so how are you doing with the schedule? Everybody see we're kind of on the same page with that? All right, so let's start talking about the nervous system, unless you guys have some questions. Got any questions? None so far? I think I want to turn the lights down just a little bit. How about, no, that one I'll leave on, that one I'll turn off, that one I'll turn off. Ooh, how's that? Too dark? How's that? Better? Okay. All right, so nervous system. What do you know about nervous system? You actually know quite a bit because we studied nervous tissue in the, what, tissues chapter. So nervous tissue is one of how many different kinds of tissues in your body? Four. And you should know what are the two main kinds of cells that make up nervous tissue? Neurons and support cells. Neurons and support cells. You're going to learn a better name for support cells today, but a neuron is something that can conduct electrical information long distances in your body and very rapidly without degradation. All right, so it's an information transfer system. That's one of its jobs, and it transfers that information very rapidly. So if we look at the nervous system on the diagram that we have right here, we have receptors or sensors that can pick up stimuli from the environment. There could be temperature, it could be visual, it could be auditory, it could be chemical smells and tastes and things like that. In this case, we have a photoreceptor, and then that sends information to the central nervous system. These receptors, at least this one right here, is in your peripheral part of your body. It's not in your central nervous system. So it sends signals into the central nervous system via a sensory fiber neuron. When we say sensory, we also call it afferent with an A. Afferent or sensory neurons are exactly the same. It's taking information from the periphery, bringing it into the central nervous system. And once that information is in the central nervous system, the CNS does something with it. It integrates it up. It means it makes sense out of it. It compares it to other information arriving at the same time or just previously. And then the central nervous system makes a decision on what to do with that information. And when it makes a decision, then it sends out signals to effectors in the body. And we know some effectors, like skeletal muscle is a voluntary effector. And what's the job of this effector right here, this skeletal muscle? It's to contract. That's all a skeletal muscle can do. But it needs nervous signal in order to contract, and it gets a nervous signal from this motor neuron. So a motor neuron takes information from the central nervous system out to the periphery, and sometimes we call that efferent. That's an efferent neuron. So efferent is exiting, afferent is entering the central nervous system. All right, and central nervous system is composed of the brain and the spinal cord. All right, so that's a pretty good overview of the nervous system in terms of its function. It brings signals in, makes sense out of them, makes a decision, and sends that decision out to the periphery. Okay. So, let's look at some basic divisions of the nervous system. Well, there are two main divisions. There's central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. The central nervous system is composed of the brain and the spinal cord. And you're kind of familiar with that because we've studied bones a lot. And remember, the brain is contained within the cranium or cranial vault. You probably remember some bones that make the cranial vault. And where is the spinal cord located? What bones surround the spinal cord? All the vertebrae, yeah, right? Because the vertebrae have the vertebral foramen, and if you line up all the vertebrae, that forms the vertebral canal that the spinal cord goes through. So the cranial bones is the armor plating that protects the brain, and all the vertebrae is that armor plating that protects the spinal cord. Okay, the peripheral nervous system then is everything else. Everything outside the brain and the spinal cord, namely nerves. Okay, and also we're going to look at something called ganglia. So these are the more microscopic structures that make up nerves in the peripheral nervous system. Some of the more microscopic structures that make up the central nervous system are what we call tracts. And a tract is like a nerve, but it's inside the central nervous system. It's a group of nerves that are traveling from one part of the brain to another, right? Or maybe from the brain down through the spinal cord. That's what we call a tract. And the brain and spinal cord also have nuclei. I'll have to show you what a nucleus is in just a little bit. But let's just consider the different divisions of the peripheral nervous system, okay, or of the nervous system in general. So I like this diagram that I've built up, but it's very similar to the diagram that's in your textbook, okay, that I see right here. Oh, actually, I tell you what, maybe I like... Okay, this is the diagram that's currently in your textbook. All right, so this is a similar kind of diagram that I have right here. All right, so the nervous system can be broken down into what? Central nervous system and everything outside, which is what we call the peripheral nervous system. All right, so central nervous system is brain and spinal cord, but now what makes up the peripheral nervous system? Let's start to dissect that peripheral nervous system a little bit. Well, we said that there are neurons that bring sensory information into the brain, all right? So we call that the sensory division. What's another name for sensory division? Afferent. And remember, within a neuron, signals can only go one direction. It's not bidirectional. It can only go in one direction. So a sensory neuron can only bring information into the central nervous system, but not out. So how does information get out of the central nervous system and into your periphery to control various effector organs? You need a different kind of neuron, and those are what we call motor or efferent. Okay? So as a matter of fact, if we think of just the spinal cord, so here we see on the slide on the right, here we see a spinal cord. Some nerve fibers bring information up to the brain. Other nerve fibers in the spinal cord bring signals from the brain down to the lower levels of the spinal cord. So which one would we want to call what function they carry? So the nerve fibers that bring information up to the brain, what kind of fiber would that be? Would that be afferent or efferent? Bringing to the brain would be afferent, and then taking signals away would be efferent, right? So even within the spinal cord, right, you have sensory tracts and motor tracts, depending on which way signals are moving. Okay. All right, so furthermore, the motor division we can break down into two divisions. We have somatic and we have autonomic. And autonomic, I suppose you could just say, is automatic, things that you don't have to think about. Somatic, on the other hand, is the voluntary nervous system, which carries signals to the things that you can't control with your conscious thought. And what kinds of things can you control with your conscious thought? Oh, like I'm thirsty right now. What am I controlling? The skeletal muscle, right? So skeletal muscle is controlled by the somatic motor nervous system. So that's voluntary. And somatic just means the body, and you have skeletal muscles on the external parts of your body as opposed to visceral, which are things that are inside body cavities, like the abdominal cavity and pelvic cavity. Those would be viscera. So somatic means parts of your body that are not contained within these deep body cavities, more on the surface of your body, somatic. Okay, so sometimes we use voluntary or somatic synonymously and visceral, all right, and autonomic synonymously. Furthermore, we can break the autonomic nervous system down into two divisions. All right, and these are the divisions that take care of things automatically for you. You have sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. And these things go to three different kinds of effector organs. Smooth muscle, you don't have control of that. They're controlled automatically in your body. Cardiac muscle, again, you don't have control of that. It's taken care of for you by the autonomic nervous system. And various glands, salivary glands, sweat glands, sebaceous glands, even glands that secrete digestive enzymes. You don't have to think about when these glands should secrete their products. Right? It's just taken care of automatically for you, part of the autonomic nervous system. All right, so when you're up over here, when you look at this part of the diagram, somatic versus autonomic, maybe right around in here, you should write down what the effector organs are for these two different divisions of the peripheral nervous system. And it's kind of done for you a little bit, but make sure you really see that. The somatic nervous system has effector organs that we call what? Skeletal muscle, because those are voluntary, but the autonomic nervous system has effector organs that are, and there's three kinds, and those are what? Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. So as a matter of fact, your whole body could be broken down into those four kinds of effector organs, skeletal muscle, smooth, cardiac, and glands. All right, and which part can you control with your conscious thought? There's only one of everything, right? And it's skeletal muscle. Everything else is controlled autonomically for you. Okay, in this slide over here, you just see a representation of these various things. Okay, so as we're talking about nervous system, for the next couple of days, you might want to just refer to this diagram that's the first picture here in your lecture notes. All right, so information processing. Well, we looked at that already. Okay, we have sensory or afferent, means that, there are inputs to, there are receptors, and receptors send signals via an afferent pathway into the brain, right? So we call this somatic sensation, if it's on the surface of your body, and then the central nervous system processes that information, and then it sends a decision out these efferent pathways to the proper effector organs, whether it's skeletal muscle or even visceral organs like, or visceral effectors like cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands. All right, so let's look at some, I tell you what, I want to point this out to you. So here is a nice representation of the whole nervous system. We've got central nervous system made of brain and spinal cord, and then everything else is what? The peripheral nervous system, which includes nerves. And then we also have certain locations where we have a lot of nerve cell bodies, and we call these ganglia in the peripheral nervous system. All right, but you don't know what a cell body is yet. So let's look at a neuron. All right, so remember, nervous tissue is made out of two different kinds of cells, neurons and support cells or neuroglia. So let's look at a neuron first. So I'm going to put that aside, and I think this is the chapter that I want to be looking at, or the book, the edition. Yeah, here's a nice neuron. All right, so we see a neuron that's in a yellow or gold, and then we have some support cells that are kind of like in this gray color. All right, so let's focus our attention on this gold kind of cell. Well, this right here is the major body of the cell. So this is what we call the cell body. And sometimes we call that the soma, because soma means body. So soma or cell body contains the nucleus and a lot of organelles. Neurons are highly metabolic. That means they need a lot of ATP. So what kind of organelles would you expect to find in a neuron? Mitochondria. And indeed, I see some mitochondria here. Look, they're all over the place inside the cell body. But we also see some processes sticking off the cell bodies right here. These small processes are what we call dendrites. They're highly branched. All right, so the cell body and dendrites are the receiving part of a neuron. They receive signals from other neurons. And then they send that information to an axon. So here is an axon. It's a really long process. And this particular neuron only has one really long axon. And then here's the axon terminus over here. And do you see any arrows on this diagram? How about along this axon right here? Here I see an arrow. And how many heads does this arrow have? Is it bidirectional or just a one direction? That's right. A neuron is always a one-way street. It only sends information from dendrites to cell body, then down the axon, never the reverse direction. So information doesn't go from an axon terminus up the axon to the cell body and out a dendrite. Just doesn't go in that particular direction. All right, so that's what I have on your word slide. You have a stimulus, which is picked up by a dendrite. It flows into a cell body and then down an axon to the very tip of an axon. So what else do we see right here? Well, we got a nucleus. There's that nucleolus. We have Nissl substance right here, which is rough endoplasmic reticulum, which is responsible for making all of the material that this neuron needs. And it needs a lot of material down here at these axon terminals, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit. And these support cells are what we call Schwann cells. Some neurons do not contain Schwann cells, and it just means that this impulse travels down an axon very slowly as a result. So the nerve impulse has to be conducted in a continuous fashion all the way down the axon, and that takes a long time. But if an axon is myelinated, if it has a Schwann cell on the axon, that nerve impulse can actually hop from one region, from one end of the Schwann cell to the next. And these little junctions between Schwann cells are called nodes of Ranvier. And when a nerve impulse hops from one node to the next, to the next, to the next, we call that saltatory conduction. Saltatory conduction, and it's hundreds of times faster. So neurons that can conduct in a saltatory fashion are much faster. And that's really good, because what happens if you have information coming in saying that, oh, there's a bus coming right at you? Do you want for that information to take a long time to get to the central nervous system, or rapidly, as soon as possible, right? So that your brain can say, oh, well, I need to get out of the way of that bus, right? So saltatory conduction is an advantage over slowly conducting neurons. All right, and so you should know what kind of axons can conduct impulses very fast. It's the ones that are myelinated that have Schwann cells on them, the support cells. All right, so that is pretty good. So you should also know this axon hillock right here. This is a part of a neuron, and it kind of reminds me of something that I might use to pour oil in my engine, or you might even have in your kitchen, but you're not going to be pouring motor oil around in your kitchen someplace. What does this kind of remind you of? A funnel. Yeah, as a matter of fact, this axon hillock actually acts like a funnel. It funnels information from all of these dendrites and information that's being gathered by the cell body into the axon. And this is the area right here where integration takes place. So every cell, every neuron acts as an integration center. It can add together information from thousands of other neurons right here in the axon hillock. So that's a pretty important thing to see. Okay. So neurons right here have the ability to conduct electrical impulses. They live an extremely long period of time. They don't divide. Well, we're changing our opinion on that, but most don't divide. Okay, but they have a high metabolic rate. So we see a lot of mitochondria in there making ATP. And in order for mitochondria to make ATP, they need something. Does anybody know what the requirements of a mitochondria is in order to make ATP? I'll give you a hint. They need oxygen. That's right. They need oxygen to make ATP. So when somebody's heart stops beating, okay, and oxygen isn't delivered to the brain, these mitochondria stop making ATP. And to give you a sense of how rapidly or how metabolic these neurons are, right, as soon as they run out of ATP, you lose consciousness. How long does it take a person to lose consciousness when their heart stops? Because blood and oxygen is not getting to the brain. It's about 3 seconds, okay, 2 to 3 seconds. And you lose consciousness, you pass out. And then, after a certain period of time, if somebody's not revived, if oxygen isn't being delivered to the brain, this neuron uses up so much ATP, the neuron actually dies. And as a matter of fact, the brain will die as well when neurons die. How long does it take for a person's brain actually to die when they stop breathing? Okay, about 3 minutes. So 3 seconds you're unconscious, and 3 minutes, only 3 minutes, the brain is dead. And once the brain is dead, what does that mean? Can't come back to life. If you're unconscious, they can bring you back to life, but not once that brain is dead. That's how important some of these techniques are for breathing for somebody when they can't breathe for themselves, or beating somebody's heart for somebody when their heart can't beat by itself. What do you call that stuff? Yeah, CPR, right? So a lot of you I know are CPR certified. So that just preserves the health of these neurons that are inside the brain so somebody doesn't die. All right, so we classify neurons by their shape, and when their shape changes, guess what? Their function is going to change as well. So we're first going to be able to identify neurons by their shape, and so we got three structural classifications. We got multipolar, we got bipolar, and unipolar. So let's find out where these are. Okay, you have a table, I think, in your new edition that shows these different kinds of neurons. That's close. I think it's the next slide. Ah, right here. Okay, so these are the three: multipolar, bipolar, and unipolar. Sometimes the unipolar we call pseudo-unipolar. All right, so this is the neuron that we looked at just a second ago. This is a multipolar neuron. It's got a bunch of dendrites, highly branched, that are relatively short. Here's the cell body. What's another name for cell body? Soma. And then here's an axon, one really long axon, and then here are the axon terminals. And if we zoom in, I'll lose my little cursor, but can you see that these axon terminals here have like a little pad or swelling at the tip of them? Okay, maybe you can see that. It has a little swelling right on the tip on the axon terminus. We're going to make sense of that in just a little bit. Okay, so this kind of neuron is what we call a motor neuron. What does a motor neuron do? Which way is it taking signals? It's taking signals out of the central nervous system to an effector organ, like a skeletal muscle, if it's a somatic pathway. Okay. We also find multipolar neurons as interneurons, which are completely within the central nervous system. I'll have to show you a picture of that sometime today, a little bit later on. So for right now, just think of this as a multipolar neuron, and it's a motor neuron taking signals out of the central nervous system. The next one that we see over here is a bipolar. So here is the soma, or the cell body, and it has two long processes. One is the receiving end, the other is the sending end. So one is a really long dendrite, and the other is a really long axon. We find these in just a couple locations in the body, but they're kind of like our favorite locations, right? They're involved with special senses, like vision, all right? So that's a real important sense for me, and I'm sure for everybody. Vision and smell have bipolar neurons, so these are special neurons for sensation, and as a matter of fact, some very special kinds of senses. And then the third kind of neuron almost looks like a bipolar, but not quite. Here's the cell body, and then there's one stalk coming out of the cell body, and then it bifurcates, which means it splits into two very long processes, one over here and one over here to the right. This part of the neuron goes into the peripheral nervous system. Maybe this is in the tip of your toe, connecting up to some sensory receptors in your toe for pressure or pain or temperature. Right, and then these signals move in toward the brain, so this is a sensory neuron or afferent neuron. And then this part enters the spinal cord right here. What part of the nervous system is the spinal cord? It's central. That's why we call this the central process, because it goes into the spinal cord. Right, and what are the two parts of the central nervous system? Brain and spinal cord. Okay, and if it's not brain and spinal cord, what else is it? What else could it be? Peripheral, right? So this part is the part of the neuron that's in the peripheral nervous system, that's out in your periphery someplace, bringing information into the central nervous system. So this is what we call a unipolar. I don't think I have pseudo-unipolar anywhere, but anyway, if you see unipolar, you know what? If it's pseudo-unipolar, that's the same thing as a unipolar neuron. All right, I want to zoom back out a little bit. So which way does information travel in a neuron? One direction or two directions? One direction. And it's always, remember, dendrite to cell body to an axon down to the end of an axon. So all of these neurons are color-coded in how they behave in terms of physiology. So we have like a blue region, right? Is that blue right in here? Or is it lavender? It's blue. That blue region, this is the receptive part. This is the receiving part of a neuron. So here we see the receiving part of a multipolar neuron, which is the dendrite and cell body. Here is the receptor part of a bipolar neuron, which again is what? Dendrites and cell body, but it's a little bit bigger area. And then here is the receptive part on a unipolar neuron. It's really short, right? Not very much area right here. And then the sending part, or the conducting region, sending or conducting is always the axon. Here it is on the multipolar, here is the sending part on the bipolar, and this whole thing is the sending part on a unipolar neuron. And then each of these neurons have an axon terminus, and these axon terminus always secrete a neurotransmitter that you can see with these little dots right here. And so this is what we call the secretory region. That's going to carry information to a neighboring neuron. So I like this little functional diagram that you have in your books. Okay, so structural classification, you got multipolar, that is what? A motor neuron. Bipolar is sensory, and unipolar is also sensory, but a bipolar is for a very special sense, like vision, for instance. Right? Multipolar neurons can also be interneurons. They lie completely, they're completely found within the spinal cord, which is part of the central nervous system. All right, so those are neurons, and neurons are specialized to conduct electrical information very rapidly. All right, from dendrite to cell body down an axon in every particular case. The only other kind of nerve cells that we have in the central nervous system, we call them support cells, or we could call them neuroglia. All right, so here's that term, neuroglia, or neuroglial cells. You could call them either one. Okay, these are not neurons. They don't send electrical impulses, but they help neurons do their job. All right, so they're pretty important. And I want you to be able to recognize a number of support cells as well in the nervous system. So let's look at some support cells. Where do we see support cells? Okay, support cells could be broken down into two locations. One location we have four different kinds of support cells in the central nervous system, and in the peripheral nervous system we have a different kind of support cell. We got two different kinds in the peripheral nervous system. So let's start with the central nervous system. Here is one, and this is a support cell because I don't see it colored yellow. So here is a yellow cell. That's a neuron. This is the one that conducts electrical impulses. This one that kind of looks like a beige color or cream color right here. And here is the cell body. It has a lot of processes, but these processes don't conduct electrical information, right? They connect up to a blood vessel. Here's a capillary with one of these processes, and the other process connects up to the neuron right here. So this is a bridge between the blood and the neuron, and this astrocyte can take nutrients out of the blood and directly deliver it to this neuron right here. An important metabolite would be glucose. That's another thing that mitochondria need in order to make ATP. So mitochondria need oxygen and glucose. This astrocyte can take glucose right out of the blood and deliver it to this axon, to this neuron right here. Okay? But there are also other things inside the blood. Anything that you eat that is absorbed by your gastrointestinal tract ends up in the blood, and many of these substances are toxic to the brain. Right, so that means it's going to have a harmful effect on the brain. So we don't want, or the brain has evolved to protect the brain from everything that's in the blood. So there's a barrier. Can you see all these little processes completely surround this capillary right here? So we call that the blood-brain barrier. That protects the brain, this neuron, from toxic substances so that you don't lose consciousness or lose concentration whenever you eat some kind of toxic thing. Like any kind of plant always produces toxic materials because a plant doesn't want to be eaten by an animal, so it develops a resistance to being eaten, right? And these substances then go to the liver and are detoxified before they have a bad effect on the brain. So that's another job of the astrocyte. It makes a blood-brain barrier. So astrocytes are important for glucose transport, involved in the blood-brain barrier. And here is something fascinating about astrocytes. In certain parts of the brain, okay, depending on a person's activity level, how much they're thinking, how much they're using their brain, these astrocytes will tell these neurons to make new connections within themselves. So astrocytes determine the network between different cells in the brain. And that's just one theory of learning. In order for you to learn something, then there has to be more interconnections between nerve cells. All right, so that's pretty interesting because when you take a pretty hard class, like maybe a language class or music class or anatomy or physiology, right, you're learning new stuff, and in order for you to learn new stuff, these astrocytes have to tell neurons how to make new connections between themselves. New networks have to be developed. So what does that mean when you take a really hard class like this? The structure of your brain is actually changing. Okay, more connections are being made. So that means you actually get smarter and smarter and smarter. The more you use your brain, the smarter it gets because these astrocytes tell these nerve cells to communicate with more nerve cells throughout your brain, and that's really kind of marvelous. All right, so that's just a little bit of learning theory. And when people stop learning, these astrocytes, okay, regress a little bit, and the brain loses connections, unfortunately, and then you lose, you know, some thought power. I suppose you could call that IQ, okay? So that's why sometimes really hard classes, at the very beginning, they're really difficult. It may be very difficult for some people to learn anatomy the first couple months, because what has to happen before they become really familiar with how to learn anatomy? The structure of your brain actually has to change a little bit before, all right, you become very efficient in learning anatomy due to these astrocytes right here. Now, where do we find these astrocytes? What part of your nervous system? Central nervous system, that's right. And what kind of cell is that? Is that a neuroglia or a neuron? It's a neuroglia cell or a neuroglial cell, right? So for years and years and years, physicians and scientists were very interested in neurons, right? Because we consider that the functional unit within the nervous system because it carries information very rapidly. And now we're very interested in these neuroglia cells because it helps determine what the function of these neurons are. Okay? And it keeps your brain, when these astrocytes are active, it keeps your brain young and you're able to learn. And when they stop doing their function, then you have difficulty learning and coping with new circumstances in your life. So they're very important. Another kind of neuroglia cell in the central nervous system is a microglia cell. And does that look a little different than an astrocyte? These processes, it still has these processes going all over the place, but they're much thinner, highly branched. These guys are kind of like white blood cells in your brain. They're moving around looking for things that don't belong in your brain. Like what kind of cells might not belong in your brain? Like bacteria, if you have an infection, okay, or viruses, maybe even if you have parasites or fungi in the brain, or even if you have tumor cells. These microglia cells will attack and kill those cells before it harms your brain. All right, so these are immune cells. They fight infections. Macrophage for a microglia cell just means that it's a, what does macro mean? Macro means big, and phage means to eat something, so these are just what we call big eater cells. They just crawl around in our brain looking for things that don't belong there. Okay, another kind of cell are what we call ependymal cells. Inside our brain and even our spinal cord, throughout the whole central nervous system, there are cavities that are filled with fluid. And you're going to learn that some of these cavities are called ventricles inside the brain. And there is a lining between that cavity that is filled with cerebrospinal fluid and the brain proper. So here is a lining. This almost looks like an epidermis epithelium. Okay? Because it's what? Lining this surface right here? And these kind of look like maybe just a simple columnar or cuboidal epithelium. All right, but these are actually part of the nervous system, so we call these ependymal cells. So again, it protects the brain from things that might be in the cerebrospinal fluid, but another job of these ependymal cells is that in some locations of the brain, it actually makes that cerebrospinal fluid that fills these cavities. So we'll have to talk more about cerebrospinal fluid next time. But it comes from these ependymal cells. And then lastly, inside the brain, we have oligodendrocytes. And oligodendrocytes, you can see, here's the cell body, has many different processes, and when it hits an axon, when it comes close to an axon, it wraps itself around an axon over and over and over again. So these kind of remind me of a cell that we saw previously on that multipolar neuron, which is what we call a Schwann cell, but this one right here is an oligodendrocyte because we don't have Schwann cells in the CNS. In the CNS, we have oligodendrocytes. An oligodendrocyte can put what we say a myelin sheath around multiple axons, not just one, and maybe in multiple locations. And at the end of this oligodendrocyte, here we have a little node of Ranvier. So these axons are carrying impulses very quickly via saltatory conduction. So that chemical compound that forms this myelin sheath is what we call myelin, and it's a lipid. And that lipid acts like insulation. So it prevents electrical information from leaking out of this axon right here. So think of an axon maybe as being a wire that you have in your house. Maybe here's a wire that's going to a toaster, right? And do you have insulation on that wire that's going to a toaster? Well, let's just say that you didn't have insulation on that wire and you wanted to unplug your toaster. Would you grab that wire? No, because you would get that electric shock, right? So this insulation, just like a wire in your house, keeps the electricity in the wire or this axon, keeps it from leaking out. And that's one of the reasons why impulse conduction is very fast on a myelinated axon. So I could ask you, what's the name of that chemical compound that insulates an axon? It's myelin. And what's the name of the cell that secretes myelin in the central nervous system? It is this oligodendrocyte right here. Okay. So in the peripheral nervous system, we don't have oligodendrocytes. So now we're flipping to the other kind of the other part of the nervous system, not central nervous system, but peripheral. Here are the Schwann cells. And again, they secrete myelin in multiple layers around an axon, and it acts as insulation so that electricity cannot leak out of that axon, so it only can hop from one node to the next. All right, so here is, does anybody remember what kind of cell neuron this is right here? That is the unipolar, right? So here is that one process that bifurcates, and this could be like the peripheral process in the peripheral nervous system, and then this is the process that goes into your central nervous system. So if this is the process that is going to enter your central nervous system, what do we call this process here? This is the central process because it's going into the central nervous system. Here is the peripheral process because it's in your peripheral nervous system. So it takes information from the periphery into your central nervous system. Here's the cell body. And there are cells that surround the cell body, and we call these satellite cells. Just like, what do the planets do? They surround what? They surround the sun, right? So they orbit around the sun. These aren't orbiting around the cell body, but they surround it. And when somebody took a picture of this long, long time ago, it kind of reminded them of, like, maybe the sun with some, or a planet with some satellites around it, like moons around it. So they called these satellite cells, because it was only the nuclei that really showed up in the pictures. Okay, so these are the two kinds of support cells in the peripheral nervous system, Schwann cells and satellite cells. All right, so slide over here just shows you how a Schwann cell wraps itself around an axon. Okay, these inner layers right on the axon contain myelin, so we call this the myelin sheath. But what else does a cell have besides myelin? What are some other things that a cell has? It's got a nucleus, and what else? It's got cytoplasm, it's got a whole bunch of organelles, right, like endoplasmic reticulum and mitochondria, right? We call that cytoplasm. So on this Schwann cell right here, the inner layers contain myelin, and when it's wrapping itself around, it kind of squishes all the cytoplasm to this very peripheral or outer ring of the Schwann cell, and that outer ring right there is what we call the neurolemma. The neurolemma contains the cytoplasm of the Schwann cell. These inner rings right here contain myelin, right? So sometimes it's hard to find what this neurolemma means, but that's the living part of the Schwann cell that contains cytoplasm, which means what? The nucleus and all the other organelles and cytosol you'll find in this layer right here. Okay, so that myelin sheath, okay, means that it can conduct impulses very rapidly by saltatory conduction. Okay, the next topic that we're going to talk about is the communication between cells. All right, so cells do communicate with each other, and I want you to become familiar with the concept of a synapse. Okay, a synapse is the structural and functional unit of communication between cells in the body. And there are two kinds of synapses. I'm going to have to write this on the board. All right, some are electrical, and some are chemical. Okay, so sometimes information moves from one cell to another as an electrical signal, and sometimes information is passed from one cell to another via a chemical signal. Electrical synapses are fairly rare in the body. Most are chemical synapses. So let's see if I can find an illustration of two cells communicating with each other. You know, your book no longer has a good picture of it, but the previous edition does. So let's look at this picture right here. You don't have this in your textbook, but that's okay. All right, so how many neurons do you see in the top part of this slide right here? I see two. I see one cell body right here, and I see another cell body down over here. So these are two separate cells. And here's that link between the cells that we're going to call a synapse. All right, so this first cell is what we call the presynaptic neuron. And this neuron right here that comes after the synapse is the postsynaptic neuron. Okay, and which way do signals always move on a neuron? From a dendrite to cell body down an axon. And then it's going to hop across this synapse, right? And it's going to go from dendrite to cell body down to postsynaptic neuron. So it's always going to be a one-way street. So this is the junction between two neurons. It's a space. Okay? So here you can see the axon terminals that have this little swelling right here. Sometimes we call that a terminal button or a bouton terminale or an axon terminus, and that's because it's filled with special stuff. And the current edition does pretty good because it does show us this axon terminus very nicely. Okay, so here it is in your textbook. So in your textbook, I just see one neuron right here. And when we get down to this axon terminus, this is what it looks like. And we can see it kind of is a bulge right here because it has special vesicles in it. And these vesicles contain chemicals that are going to be the signaling molecule that's going to be released to signal the postsynaptic cell over here. And this is a highly metabolic region of a neuron, so it needs mitochondria, which takes up space. So again, that means that there's a little swelling right here. So this is a really good example of a chemical synapse. So information in the presynaptic neuron comes down to the axon terminus as an electrical signal, right? So a nerve impulse is an electrical signal moving down an axon. And then when that nerve impulse gets down to the axon terminus, it allows calcium to enter the cell, calcium ions. The calcium ions then allow these vesicles to move to the presynaptic membrane. And when these vesicles touch the presynaptic membrane, they fuse to it. And then the material inside the vesicle is released into the space between the cells. Can you see what the space between the cells is called in this area right here? That is called the synaptic cleft. And these are what we call synaptic vesicles. So these synaptic vesicles release their product into the synaptic cleft when a nerve impulse comes down. But what did I say? What was the actual signal that causes these vesicles to fuse to this presynaptic membrane right here? There is calcium. Does anybody know what the chemical abbreviation for calcium is? It is capital C, little a, right? And it's an ion. It has a charge on it. It has two positive charges. It enters, okay, causes release of this material into the synaptic cleft. And this material right here is what we call a neurotransmitter. Because what kind of cell is secreting it? What kind of cell is this right here? Is this a muscle cell? No. What is it? It's a nervous cell of some kind. And it is what are the two kinds of nervous system cells? Neuron or a support cell. But which are the kind that have nerve impulses? Neurons. So this is a neuron. So that's why we call this a neurotransmitter, because it's being secreted by a neuron, right? But it's not an endocrine gland, because this neurotransmitter is not picked up by the blood carried all over the body. It just diffuses across the synaptic cleft, and it excites this postsynaptic neuron right here. And what's the receiving part of a neuron? It's a dendrite, right? Dendrites are the receiving part, so that's why it has postsynaptic dendrite right here. That's the receiving part. It has receptors for this neurotransmitter. So the neurotransmitter binds to a receptor, and that starts another nerve impulse on the postsynaptic neuron. So if we look at this scheme right here, in the presynaptic neuron, information moves from the dendrite down an axon as an electrical signal all the way down to the axon terminus. That electrical signal gets converted to what kind of signal in the synaptic cleft? Neurotransmitter, right? And a neurotransmitter is just a chemical. So that chemical then carries information across the synapse. And then on this postsynaptic membrane right here, the neurotransmitter binds to it, and it starts another electrical signal. So information in a chemical synapse, right? You start with an electrical signal converted to chemical, which then is converted back into an electrical signal in the postsynaptic cell. So it goes electrical, chemical, electrical. Okay, so that is what we call synaptic transmission for a chemical synapse. All right, so this is the way that neurons can communicate with each other. So what would you be like if neurons couldn't communicate with each other? Well, you might as well, then you'd be in a coma, right? Or you might as well just be dead if neurons couldn't communicate with each other. But what ion was necessary in order for communication in this kind of synapse to take place? What ion is necessary outside the cell? It is this calcium ion, right? It has to diffuse in. All right, so where else do you know that calcium is important in your body? Okay, bones, okay? And as we get older, we start to lose calcium, and your body has to make a decision. Where should calcium be maintained? Should it be maintained in your bones, or do you need it in your nervous system so that neurons can communicate with each other? If you had the choice, where would you rather have the proper levels of calcium? In your brain, so your brain functions, or in bones, so that bones are strong? The brain, and your body makes that decision too. So guess what happens as we get older? Our bones get thinner and more brittle, because it's way more important to have proper calcium in our nervous system okay, than it is in our bones. But don't be afraid, because what can you do? How can you protect yourself? You can exercise and you can have proper diet, make sure you have proper calcium in your body. And if you exercise, you make your bones really strong, okay? They build calcium up when you're young so that you can afford to lose a lot of calcium as you get older. That protects your bones. All right, so this is an example of a chemical synapse. All right, so what is the structural and functional unit of life? That's a cell. What's the structural and functional unit of muscle contraction? It is the sarcomere. Sarcomere, don't forget that one, because you'll have a test on that in a week or so. Sarcomere. What's the structural and functional unit of compact bone? Osteon, that tubular structure, right, with all the different lamellae that make an osteon up. And what's the structural and functional unit of communication between cells? It's the synapse, right? So it's nice to have a vocabulary and a way of thinking about something that's relatively complicated, right? But if you think about it as being a structural and functional unit, I think that really helps your understanding, right? So be able to break down a synapse, at least a chemical synapse, into those pieces. All right, so a synapse is composed of what? The synaptic, this right here, this is sometimes called the synaptic knob, or terminal button, or Bhutan terminology. It's got all kinds of different names. Okay, what does it have? It's got vesicles filled with neurotransmitter, and on your word slide, I give you a specific example of a neurotransmitter. All right, so the actual name of this compound in these synaptic vesicles in some neurons is called acetylcholine. Acetylcholine. Very common neurotransmitter. It's one that's used in the neuromuscular junction, right? When a skeletal muscle is stimulated by a motor neuron, it's stimulated when acetylcholine binds to receptors on the cell membrane of a muscle cell that causes electrical excitation of the muscle cell. That is acetylcholine. But also many, many neurons in the peripheral as well as central nervous system use acetylcholine, and notice that it's usually abbreviated ACH. And the H has got a lowercase h in it. All right, and what's a good definition of a synaptic cleft right here? That is the extracellular space between two neurons, okay? And electrical information can't move across that space. It has to be carried as a signaling molecule, a neurotransmitter. All right, so here is the presynaptic membrane. What is this membrane right here called? That's the postsynaptic. Okay, now information can only move from the presynaptic cell into the postsynaptic cell. And I guess I could ask you to think, why is that? Why can information only go in one direction across a synapse? There are two important reasons. One reason I see on this slide very nice, one I can't quite see, but I can explain to you. Because only one cell is secreting a neurotransmitter. What cell is secreting a signal? The presynaptic cell. The postsynaptic cell can't communicate with the presynaptic because it's not secreting a neurotransmitter. It doesn't have synaptic vesicles. The other reason is that the postsynaptic membrane is the only membrane that has a receptor for neurotransmitter. The presynaptic membrane doesn't have a receptor. So information can only go from the presynaptic cell into the postsynaptic cell and not backwards. That's pretty important. Okay, so here's where I mentioned calcium and, okay, everything that I've talked about so much. Okay, this acetylcholine signal, if it stayed in the synapse right here, it would continuously excite the postsynaptic cell, maybe forever, right? So maybe if this was a communication pathway for vision, if you were to see a flash of light or something, and if acetylcholine remained in the synaptic cleft forever, what would you see? You would see that light forever, okay? And that wouldn't be really helpful, because what happens to light? Well, it changes all the time, right? So this neurotransmitter has to be broken down so that you can be receptive to new kinds of stimuli. So there is an enzyme that breaks acetylcholine down, and it's called acetylcholinesterase. All right, anytime you see an ASE at the end of a word, that means that it's an enzyme, and its job is to break down acetylcholine so that the presynaptic cell can send another signal to the postsynaptic cell. Right, so it terminates the action of acetylcholine in the synaptic cleft. Okay, so here we got some pretty good questions. Can information ever be passed from the postsynaptic neuron back to the presynaptic neuron through the synapse? No. Okay, and you should probably know why. Because the postsynaptic cell doesn't have neurotransmitter. And the presynaptic cell doesn't have a receptor for those two particular reasons. All right, so how is information transmitted within a neuron? Within a neuron, how is information transmitted? As an electrical signal. And how is information transmitted between neurons? As a chemical signal right here. Okay. All right, so let's look at, I want to skip over this section right here. I want to talk about cell resting membrane potential. Okay, cell membrane potential is this right here. All right, so here is a neuron. What kind of neuron does that look like? Is that a bipolar, unipolar, or multipolar neuron? That's a multipolar neuron. I realize you guys are going to have to go back and study that information. But don't forget, this is the last chapter that's on that next test that's coming up in, what, about a week or so? Is it 2 weeks? Well, check your schedule. Okay, 2 weeks. All right, so here is an axon. There are two chemical compounds that we're going to be really interested in. Besides calcium, there are a couple other substances. There's something called, and we abbreviate it, NA. Maybe some of you have taken chemistry knows what NA stands for. What does NA stand for? That's sodium. That's an ion that helps make table salt, right? Sodium, NA. My marker's not really dark. It's an ion as well. Okay. And the Greek word for sodium is natrium. That's why it's abbreviated NA. And then there's another ion. That's even worse. Another ion that's abbreviated, that's not bad, K. And it's an ion, too. It has a positive charge to it. And K in Greek is kalium. But in English, we want to say potassium with a P. I know it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in English. But we got calcium. That's pretty close, right? And then sodium. Sodium, that's an ion. And then potassium. All right, so since all of these have an electrical charge on them, we call these things electrolytes. They're electrolytes, and maybe some of you have worked in a hospital. Are people in a hospital ever interested in electrolytes and knowing what the level of various electrolytes are in somebody? Absolutely, okay, for the following reasons. That's because all the cells in your body, this is a really strange concept, all the cells in your body act like a battery. And a battery, how many terminals does a battery have? Two. Some guys might know that. Some of you ladies might not know that. But in your car, you got two wires coming off a battery, right? There's a positive and a negative. And in a cell, we see that there are two regions on a cell. One is positive and one is negative. So in a neuron, so here's a neuron at rest, right? We see that it's positive on the outside and negative on the inside, which is basically what a battery does. It separates electrical charge. And it does that because of the difference in sodium and potassium. And where do you have, in a resting cell, where do you have high sodium concentration? That's what that bracket means. It means concentration. It's outside the cell. Where do you have high potassium concentration? Inside the cell, right? Okay, this little one right here just means that there is one positive charge on each of these sodiums and potassium. So on a resting cell, you have to know that high sodium on the outside, high potassium on the inside, and the inside of the cell is negative compared to the outside. All right, and the way that an electrical signal moves down this axon right here is via a nerve impulse because of motion of sodium and potassium. We call that an action potential. So where do I have that? resting membrane potential. Here is the action potential right here. And an action potential has got two parts to it. And how many ions are we interested here? There are two, right? So the two parts of an action potential are going to be due to the motion of these two electrolytes. So the first part of what we call an action potential is depolarization. Depolarization is when sodium enters the cell. So what's the charge on a sodium? What's the charge of the sodium? It's a positive, right? So when a positive enters the cell, what does that do? That cancels out the negative charge on the inside of the cell. So does that make sense? When positive enter, that depolarizes the cell. It gets rid of the negative charge inside the cell. That's what we call depolarization. So I could maybe ask you on a test, what ion is responsible for depolarization? It is sodium. And what part of an action potential is that? Is that the first part or the second part? That's the first part. What's the second part? The second part is repolarization. Right? And repolarization is when potassium leaves the cell. So what's the charge on potassium? It's a positive. It's a positive. So when a positive charge leaves the inside of the cell, when a positive charge leaves, what happens to the charge inside the cell? It becomes more negative, right? And that looks like the resting case over here, so we call that repolarization. So I do want you to know that an action potential has two parts, depolarization, which is sodium entering, and then repolarization, which is potassium leaving. And a cell at rest, all cells, not just neurons, a cell at rest is negative on the inside. That means it's positive on the outside. And there's high sodium on the outside, high potassium on the inside. Okay, and you can see that this area of depolarization actually moves down a neuron, and that's what we call a nerve impulse. So a nerve impulse is an action potential that actually moves along an axon from what direction? From the cell body all the way down to the axon terminus right here. All right, so it's an electrical event because these things that are moving across the cell membrane are electrolytes or compounds that have electrical charge on them. So let me look at this question right here. What membrane components allow, I didn't talk about this, sodium and potassium ions to move across the cell membrane passively by diffusion? Okay? Sodium and potassium usually can't move across the cell membrane, but there has to be channels that open and close at specific times. The cell controls when those channels open. So the first channel that opens is a sodium channel. The second channel that opens is the potassium channel that allows for repolarization. And what's the model that you have in your mind that you can use to think of a cell membrane that includes some complexity, not just the phospholipid bilayer, but also includes proteins that can be incorporated into the cell membrane, like channels, for instance? That's the fluid mosaic model, right? So this is a very fluid membrane, just a phospholipid bilayer, but mosaic means that it has other proteins that can be incorporated in it, and we mentioned channels at one particular time as being an important protein, and also there's another protein, and we looked at that previously, okay? And another protein could be within a synapse. Where do we have a synapse? Oh, here's a good slide. Where's that at? All right, another kind of protein that's incorporated into the postsynaptic membrane that can bind these neurotransmitters right here. All right, so that means that neurotransmitter from the presynaptic cell can excite a postsynaptic cell. These proteins incorporated into the membrane right here are receptors for neurotransmitter. So we talked about channels and receptors when we looked at the cell way back, I think, in chapter 2, as being incorporated into the phospholipid bilayer. So you might want to go back and just take a look at that pretty fancy picture. Okay, I want to go over some definitions. of things. And I want to be able to use these definitions when we start to talk about the nervous system, just like when we started to talk about bones. What were some things in bones that we had to define before it could make sense, before I could really use them in class? How about process? You had to know what that meant. What else? A condyle, or a fossa, or a foramen, right? None of those things really made sense, but you have to use them to talk about bones, so you have to define them. So here are some things of the nervous system that we have to define. All right, well, you know what a nerve cell body is, right? And you know what a dendrite is. Those are the small projections coming off the cell body, and they are not myelinated. And because they're not myelinated, they always, when you look at them, have kind of a gray appearance. They look gray. If you look at a part of a nervous system that's myelinated, it's going to look white. So myelination looks white. Things that are not myelinated look gray. And when you put thousands of nerve cell bodies together or dendrites together, put all those things that are gray together, even without a microscope, you can see gray matter in the brain. All right, so what is gray matter? It's just a cluster of nerve cell bodies and dendrites someplace that's not myelinated. So none of those things are myelinated. All right, the cortex. See you next, cortex. What part of an organ is the cortex? What about the adrenal cortex, which we talked about last time? That's the superficial part. What's the deep part of an organ? The medulla, right? Cortical bone is right on the surface. Medullary bone is deep inside the bone. The adrenal medulla is on the outside. The adrenal cortex is superficial. The adrenal medulla is deep, right? The brain as well has a cortex, which is what? Right on the surface of the brain. And it just so happens that on the surface of the brain, you have nerve cell bodies and dendrites. And where did you see myelination? Did you ever see myelination so far in any pictures yet of the nerve cell body and dendrite? Where did you see myelination? Axons. So the surface of the brain, because it has nerve cell bodies and dendrites, it's what we call gray matter because it's not myelinated. Okay, a nucleus. Not only on the surface of the brain, but deep inside the brain, there are some locations where there are thousands of nerve cell bodies and dendrites. These are special processing centers inside the brain, sharing information, integrating information up. They have special functions. And if it's deep inside the central nervous system, we call that a nucleus. So a nucleus is in what part of the nervous system? Central nervous system, and it's made out of what? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites, not myelinated axons. All right, so let's change our view a little bit from central nervous system to peripheral nervous system. Okay, there is a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites in the peripheral nervous system, just like there's a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites in the central nervous system. Central nervous system, we call it a nucleus, but in the peripheral nervous system, we call it a ganglion. Pretty much exactly the same thing, but it's a ganglion, not a nucleus. All right, so now let's take a white matter. White matter, can white matter be nerve cell bodies and dendrites? No, because white matter means that it's going to be myelinated. It's going to have either Schwann cells around it or oligodendrocytes. And it's going to be around axons. So white matter is always going to be axons if it's myelinated with a Schwann cell or oligodendrocyte. A nerve is white matter in the peripheral nervous system. Okay, so in your arms and in your legs, what kind of cells myelinate axons in the peripheral nervous system? That's going to be a Schwann cell. Okay, but a nerve tract is analogous to a nerve, but a nerve tract we find in the central nervous system. It is white matter in the central nervous system. Again, what is white matter? It is an axon that's myelinated. And what kinds of support cells myelinate axons in the central nervous system? Those would be oligodendrocytes, right? So maybe in parentheses, nerve tract, you might want to say oligodendrocytes right here. And in the peripheral nervous system, you just might want to jot down Schwann cell. And that regulates the speed of nerve conduction, right, in various parts of the nervous system. And That's really important because have you ever heard of multiple sclerosis, for instance, MS? Okay. Multiple sclerosis is a result of demyelination in certain parts of a brain in very few people where the oligodendrocytes start to actually regress, die away. And what's the job of that myelin sheath and around an axon? It speeds up the rate of nerve conduction. So when somebody has multiple sclerosis, then the neurons don't know how to communicate with each other because the speed of communication is all disrupted. Right? That's like talking to somebody, like you ever listen to a news reporter on a satellite link, and it takes like 4 seconds for them to hear what the question is, and after about 2 seconds, whoever asked the question gets impatient and starts talking while the person hasn't even heard the question yet, and then they start talking over each other. And what kind of information do you understand when you hear two people both talking to each other? Well, you don't understand what either one is saying, right? So multiple sclerosis kind of mixes up communication in the brain because the timing of these neurons is all disrupted as a result of that. So MS is a result of demyelination in the central nervous system, degradation of oligodendrocytes. All right, so look at these terms. And then next time, we do have to just talk about a couple things. All right, we did talk about different conduction speeds, but we're going to talk about nerve in particular. We'll start there and then go into central nervous system next time. Okay, so that's it for today. So is calcium important? Yes. What about sodium? Yes. What about potassium?